IEDs in Talem, ion-based, peric ion-based. So let's see what's going on over there. 1518? Okay, beautiful. With Shlomo. We have a Talem that's made for Shlomo Melech. This does not mean that Shlomo Melech wrote this Talem. That's not what it's referring to. It was rather made for Shlomo Melech. Elohim Mishpatech Melech Tein. God, your judgment, give to the king, the Tzikoskel of Melech, and your righteousness to the son of the king as well. Here's what he's doing over here. This whole Talem is going to be about Shlomo Melech, who he gave the kingdom to at the end of his life. It's like a tefillah that David HaMelech gave that his son ends up being successful and things will go well over here. So the kasha is, so if this is the last one ever written, and it seems it is the last one that David HaMelech ever wrote, why not put it at the very, very end? And the answer is because David HaMelech wanted to end with the word hallelujah. He wanted to end with like a praise of God at the end of that. Instead, this is the last of this book of David HaMelech, and it's written, it was the last one that he said at the end of his life, and it's all about what he wanted to tell over to his son David HaMelech before anything happened. David HaMelech was afraid of what was going to happen by Shaul HaMelech, what was going to happen to him. That just like by Shaul, he lost his kingship and everything was gone. He was afraid that was going to happen to Shlomo HaMelech as well. So he said, I want to make sure that this is going to remain, that everything will be there. Now everybody knows what happened to Shlomo HaMelech. Shlomo HaMelech ended up having, because he did such great things, Kadosh Baruch Hu appeared to him in a dream and he told him, I can give you one of three things. I can either give you long life, I can give you tremendous chokhmah, right? Or I can give you tremendous riches. Which one do you want? Shlomo HaMelech chose tremendous chokhmah. And Hashem said, because you chose chokhmah, I'm going to give you riches and long life as well. And it was the decision that Shlomo HaMelech made. This, through this Tehillim, was you should give Shlomo the right mindset to answer this question correctly. The way that he should answer it should be able to go through in the way that it does. The last thing that he said over here is to give him the concept of what we call lifnim mishuras adin, the ability to go beyond the letter of the law. That's what it means, tzidkas kol ben melech. Not only mishpat, not only the ability for him to judge, he should be able to be a tzaddik and do the right thing. Look what it says in Pasuk Beis. Yodin amcha. Yeah.
I don't know if you said this. Was he... Was Shlomo the son that was picked at this point, or was this before
by this
he was
point,
officially...
This is the last year of David Melech's life. So yeah, he's been chosen already. Nothing enough. He had already told Bathsheba this is going to happen. It's done. David Melech had already named Shlomo Melech as king. So yes, everybody knew about it already. That was without a question. So Yodin Amcha B'Tzedek, you should judge your nation, or he will judge your nation, with righteousness, Maniach B'Mishpat, and your poor people with Mishpat. There's a famous line about David Melech, but the way David Melech judged cases is, he would look to see, you know, what's the right thing to say in that case. And then if the poor man lost, the poor man in the case lost, he would give tzedakah to the poor man so that the poor man wouldn't lose out. And his judgment, even though he lost, he'll still be able to pay that other guy. That's what David Melech did. He did tzedakah with his mishpat. And that's what Shlomo Melech is being told that he should do, exhorted to do over here. It should be with tzedek and with mishpat. Both of them should be used over here. That's the idea. Obviously, an easy way of looking at it is that tzedek is dealing with monetary affairs, while Mishpat is referring to capital punishment. Those are the two ideas of what he's trying to go through. Either way, Yisu Harim Shalom La'am. Let the mountains give peace to the people. Let them bear peace for the people. Ugvos Bitzirka. Let the hills rule through righteousness. Now, what's the hills and the mountains over here? Mountains seem to be the kings and the princes, while the hills are referring to the queens and the other nations that are out there. That all of them should be given peace and should be given all the shalom that they could possibly get from everybody else in the world. He wanted peace, and that's what happened by Shlomo Melech's time. Shlomo Melech did not rule the world, even though he ruled the world. He did not rule the world through judgment, through waging war and grabbing them, whatever, even though he had a large army, which was a deterrent to other people. He ruled the world through peace, and that's the concept over here. All the mountains should lift their heads up in peace, and they should all be happy with everything that happens over here. That's the idea. When you govern your area properly, there won't be any robbers. There won't be any people there, because they don't feel like it's unjust. They don't feel like they need to grab them for themselves, because they feel like they have everything they need, everything they deserve. That's what they're supposed to get. And that's what Shlomo Melech was. Really, the truth is, all of this could apply for Yemos HaMashiach. Shlomo Melech's time was a precursor, we'll call like a microcosm, of what's going to be by the times of Mashiach. Just like by Mashiach, everything's going to be fair. We're all going to accept the judgment of the king. It's all going to be happy for us. That's what happened by the times of Shlomo Melech as well. And Pasuk Dalet, Yishpot Ani Ayam, he's going to judge the poor people. Yoshil Ibn Avion, he's going to save the children of the destitute, be Dakeo Sheikh. He's going to crush the oppressors. Those people that are trying to knock down the others, He's going to judge them correctly and help everybody else who needs a little bit of help. Pasuk A. They will fear you while the sun is out in the sky. And as long as the moon throughout all generations. There's obviously a big question. What does that mean exactly? In Shacharis, when the day is clear, right, and everybody's able to see and whatever it is, that's when everybody's going to see your judgment and they're going to think of it as awesome. But it gets better when the moon is out. You know what happens when the moon is out? People start telling stories. You know what I'm saying? You get a tale or two. People start exaggerating what happened. I'm like, oh man, you should have seen what happened to Shlomo Melech. He did the craziest thing. That's where Lidnei Oreach Dor Dorim. The stories get embellished for generation after generation when it's not so clear and there's nothing like that whatsoever. But there's another more obvious idea. I'm doing this from the idea of the Chovetz HaLevavos, even though we see that it's not that way. Like, obviously, the earth, right, rotates, and the sun does not revolve around the earth, right? The earth revolves around the sun. But the way we look at it is, we look at it as if the sun revolves around the earth. So let's do it this way. When the sun looks like it just went up from here to there, from the horizon, it's actually moved many, many miles. For us, it would be the way the earth rotates, right? It's been a big rotation. We don't feel the earth rotating. You know, that was the original idea when Copernicus, when Galileo said the original idea that the earth really revolves around the sun. The biggest problem they had is that, well, how do we see the sun and the moon? They said, well, the earth rotates. I said, if the earth is rotating, how come I don't fall down on the ground? So what's the answer?
Gravity.
Gravity is good, but it doesn't help if you would be pulled that way, because if you pulled the other side. So they said, why not? When I throw a ball up in the air, why doesn't the ball land over there or over there? Because the earth is rotating the whole time. So you throw a ball up high enough, it should land. The answer is, we're going so slow, you can't feel it. That at some point, the rotation of the earth is so slow, you don't feel it. But on the other hand, there is a tremendous movement that's happening. And it happens very, very fast. So the concept is that even though the sun looks like it's only from here to there, nonetheless, it's millions of miles that it seems like we've traveled over there. The analogous effect would be that when one performs a mitzvah, it looks like you're doing a tiny little thing. But the effect that it has on you and the entire world is tremendous. That's the idea behind it of what it's supposed to be. The last thing that you can learn from here is the sun sings. If anybody's read, not J.R.R. Tolkien, the other guy, who's the C.S. Lewis, the Chronicles of Narnia, he has a whole piece in there where all the stars and the sun and everything sings. He was a Christian writer. He wrote a whole book of Narnia, which was all Christian themed and everything. It was all about the lion Aslan being God, you know, Yashka in their world, right? And his idea is that all the stars and the sun sing. It's really from us that we have this idea that we can't hear it, but the stars, the sun, the planet, they all have their song that they can sing in the world, and that's what it means. Even they will tell over your chesed the great things you've done. Yerid kematzor al geiz. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will bring down like rain on the grass, kirvivim zarzifaret, like little drops, they shower upon the ground and taking care of the ground. This is the result that you get by doing tzedakah and mishpat. When you do the right thing, HaKadosh Baruch Hu showers down his praise upon you. He gives everything good back down to you, rachamim, and everything that you need in order for it to be good. Pasuk Zayin, Yivrach b'yom haTzadik, in his days, the tzadik will sprout out, the rov shalom ad bli yareach, and there will be so much peace until even the moon, you don't even see the moon anymore. In the same way that the sun makes the moon as if it's disappeared, there's no power to the moon, that's what it's going to be over here. We know this line, Yifrach b'yamav tzadik, tzadik katamor yifrach. That tzadik sprouts out and becomes like a flower, like a palm tree. It sprouts out from the ground. That's what a tzadik is going to be like. Start sprouting and everything will be around. The year the Yom Ad Yom, we're going to rule from one end of the world to the other. This is referring to Shlomo Melech ruling the entire known world at the time, from one end of the world to the other. It would mean Norad Upsayoritz, from the rivers until the ends of the earth. Whatever that means, Shlomo Melech ruled over everything that his eye could see.
Yes, she has a different interpretation.
How
do
you say it?
Kol Yad Yom, please.
That's an easy way of saying it. Yeah, but we know that Shlomo Melech ruled over more because he went further. He took over the lands that were nearby, even the sheep. Sheba, which is supposed to be a faraway land. He was supposed to have Cush brought him gifts, etc. That's the idea. But obviously, Yom HaYom could be an easy one, from Yom Kinneret until Yom HaGadol, right? But that's just the cheap answer, you know? Let's go from Atlantic Ocean until Pacific Ocean. Let's go the whole way. Why not go the entire way? The only place that he probably did not have any dominion was America. They wouldn't have known about America, so there's no way that he could have ruled over it. If he did, there is a famous line that they say that he ruled over Ophira, and they got the gold from there, and that refers to South America. It's more likely that Ophira was a country in Africa. I'm not denying that it could be that Shalmaneh ruled over the entire earth. It just would seem pointless to me. He only ruled for 40 years. It takes about a year to get to America and a year to get back. It would just be hard that he ruled over them. You want to say they gave him gold, maybe, but it would be hard. All of the seafarers, all of the ships will bow down. They will listen to what Shalmaneh has to say. All of his enemies will lick the dust. Their heads down in the ground, they can't do anything whatsoever. The kings of Tarshish and the islands, they're going to give him gifts. The kings of the land of Sheba and Seba, Eshkor, Yaqribu, they're going to bring things as well. That's the idea of what's going to happen. Now, this is a good little muscle over here. A man who didn't know anything whatsoever said to Rav Oshia, this guy was an Amar, it's Shane Kamohu, said to Rav Oshia, if I tell you a really nice thing, will you darshan into my name? Will you say it in my name? He said, what is it? He said, all the gifts that Yaakov gave to Esau, the sheep and the goats and all those things that he gave him, in the future will be given back to us, right, through Mashiach. It'll be given to Mashiach. Why? Because we see from this passage, Malchus, Tarshish, V'yim, Mimcha, Yashivu, etc., it says, not that they're going to bring, it says, Yashivu, they're going to return it to us, as if we gave them first. That means we're going to get back all of the things that we once gave up. Said Rabbi Yosha, by your life, you said a great thing, and I'll say it in your name. That's the pshat. They're going to return to us the value of all the sheep and the goats and whatever with interest. With interest. It's been over 3,000 years since then. That's going to be a good amount of interest. Nice little amount. Then it says, they will all bow down to him. All the kings in the world, everybody will serve him. This referring to, again, Shlomo Melech, a microcosm of Mashiach. Because he saves the destitute who is crying, the unibainos are low, the poor person who no one else was willing to help. And that's the greatness of the king and what Mashiach is going to do. And Shlomo Melech, even though he was so great, had all the awesomeness in the world, still, he was able to look at the destitute, the people that were poor, the people that were nobodies, and he will say to them, I'm still going to help you. You think that he's all the way up there. He's this great man. When he has to help them, he's the one that has to get involved. And the answer is, yeah. He has to do that. That's the idea behind it, what he has to do over here. He's going to save him from when it came over here. That's what the king has the power to do. Plus, he can give him Yochos Aldal, he'll pity on the poor, the Evyon and the destitute, and Nashos and Yom Yoshia, and he'll save the souls of those who are destitute. Mitoch Omechamat Yigal Nafsham, he's going to redeem their soul. This is referring to these people over here, the poor people, from the violence and the oppression that they have, the Eker Domim Be'enav, and their blood is going to be precious in his eyes. He's not going to spill it just because, well, these guys are really poor anyway, what's the difference? No, he's going to treat them with respect because he knows what they can do over here. So that they live, and he will give them of that gold that Sheba gave him. They'll daven for him constantly. Every single day they will give him a bracha and give him what he wants to do. And that's awesome. When somebody davens for you every single day and gives you everything you want, there will be unbelievable amounts of grain. Pisas bar means pieces, really, much grain in the land on tops of the mountains. Yirash kalavanon pirio, the fruit will shake, quake, like those in the Lebanon. That's how much fruit there's going to be. The grain is going to be abundant. The fruit is going to be abundant. And they're going to blossom on a city like grass. You're going to have fruits growing like grass in the world. The cool thing that we learned from over here, there were golden fruits that Shlomo Melech planted in the base of Mikdash. Now, if we want to go in Shad is that he had golden apples that were growing in the base of Mikdash constantly, and that whenever the Kohanim were hungry, they could take from those apples, they could eat from the apples, and they were growing inside there. But you want to learn the real Pshat, gold really grew from the trees themselves. That somehow they were able to plant some type of gold that grew by the base of Mikdash. And the Kohanim were able to become rich out of the gold that was growing in the base of Mikdash itself. You say that money doesn't grow on trees. You're right, money doesn't. Gold does though. And gold went there, and it dried up when the non-Jews entered into the base of Mikdash.
Isn't there something like, still from the word that
glowworm?
Something that's like for something.
Sure, there is something glowworm. I mean, there is.
Something is it
guano?
Is it bad? Something is it possible that maybe?
Yeah, why not? Maybe it's something. Yeah, it's not bad. It's not from animals. It's got to be from a tree. It says it's
no, I'm saying so insects like that are attached to that tree. Or
in theory, maybe these insects are able to have these like gold little things out there. Listen, if you have spiders that are making these huge webs, why not say that it's gold string? That's what you're saying, yeah.
Why not supposed to enrich themselves?
They couldn't engorge themselves. They couldn't get involved in typhus in this world, but they could take the gold if they needed it. Like, if you went home, you're just like, I could use a dollar. Take a leap. That's all you need to do. Right? That's all you'd have to do when it came to stuff like that. Rabbi Gamliel once said over to other people, he said, Eretz Yisrael will end up having gluskos and klei milas come from their trees. Clothing and cakes that come from the trees themselves. Right? As it says, there will be an abundance of grain in the land by the time of Mashiach. So a Talmud went up to him and said, that's ridiculous. There's no way there's going to be cakes that grow from trees or anything like that. So he said, there's nothing new under the sun. Rabbi Gamliel said, I'll show you what this is like in our present world. He showed him mushrooms. There's like a soft bark that surrounds the trunk of the palm tree. He said, that bark is going to turn into something that can be used for clothing. The same way that we scrape wool off and we make clothing off it, that will be found to be able to have some type of property that you can make something out of. Now, it could be, I don't know. It could be that synthetically, nowadays, we're able to take bark from trunks or whatever it is and make it into clothing. Maybe there are certain plants that we're able to make it out of. I know what we do with flax and linen. Maybe there's something that we could do. And in that sense, clothing can grow from trees, right? And so too, there's no question about the cakes, right? If you have a sweet enough fruit, right, you could have something that's out there. But the Medrash says that it's mamish bread that grows from the trees. They're going to have trees that are literally going to give forth bread. Everybody asks, what was the tree that Adam Rishon ate from, right? So one opinion was, it was grapes. Another opinion is, it's figs, right? Another opinion is, it's an esrog. The fourth opinion is that it's wheat. The question is, what does that mean? You can't have wheat. There's no such thing as wheat grown from trees. Wheat grows straight from the ground. Even grapes is akasha, but like I guess you can do it. But wheat, it's not possible. The answer is, it was wheat, but it was fully made wheat. The tree gave birth to bread. Bread that came from the tree itself. Now, what kind of would assume was whole wheat. I don't think it was sifted through. My havamina is that it was whole wheat bread, which to me would have been Gehenna. I don't think that would have been good for me whatsoever. Because what? Yeah, I would assume so. Almost the lechamina aretz. It's literally the lechamina aretz, the bread that came out from the ground itself. But even that, even in the mountains where it's dry and there's no moisture, there's still going to be fruit and everything like that. And of course, this all could be a remnant to Tchias HaMeisim. That's the idea behind it as well. Tchias HaMeisim are the people that are coming out from the ground itself. That's the idea behind it. That's the idea behind it, what comes from this. Yishmo Le'olam, God's name will endure forever. And before the sun comes out, this is for sure not refurnished, Shlomo Melech. Now we're getting to Mashiach. His name is Yino. And all the nations that are now happy, they'll bench him and they'll give him everything there. Now, this is interesting. Mashiach has a name, right? What is Mashiach's name? Now, the problem with saying his name is that once you know what his name is, then all you have to do is name your kid that and just hope that that's hope for the best. Right? That would be that, right? If Yino Shmo, if Yino is his name, then that's awesome altogether. You just have to name your kid Yino. Since I don't know a single person by the name of Yino, I don't know if anybody here knows one, right? I'm pretty much good if I name my next kid Yino. Right? When somebody asks me, like my wife, why would you name your kid Yino? And I'll say, Mashiach. It's Mashiach's name. So I want this kid to be Mashiach. That's what's going to happen over here. I would assume it's there. The funny thing is that there's a Gemara in Sanhedrin where everybody tries to guess Mashiach's name. Debe Reb Shilo. The base manager Reb Shilo said his name was Shilo. Pretty easy, right? That's a good one. Debe Reb Yanai said his name was Eno. Debe Reb Chanina said his name is Chanina. And Debe Menachem Ben Chizkiah says the name is Menachem. It's pretty awesome. You can darshan your own name as being Mashiach's name. But each one of them with darshan, they're saying our Rebbe could be Mashiach. And in essence, it could be Menachem Mendel. In theory, Menachem Mendel could have been. He's not anymore, he said. But nonetheless, that great tzaddik could have been Mashiach in his time. That's that. You know the cool part? You know the name Mashiach? Mashiach doesn't mean anything. Mashiach just means anointed one. Right? That's all it means. Mashiach stands for Menachem, Shiloh, Yino, Chanino. The four names that are given in the Gemara is in the name of Mashiach. That's why we call him Mashiach. It's not from just anointed one. It's not from anything else. It's from that.
The Targum has a
carry that. Yeah,
Targum has a different name.
What do you got?
Mizamun. Mizamun.
Mizamun? No way. Is that the name that he gives? Mizamun, obviously. That just doesn't sound right. Mizamun. I don't like that name. We're not going to get that one. That kid, my kid's not getting Mizamun. I'm going to keep my Shia though. I don't mind. What? Mizumin, right? Yeah, make Mizumin. Yeah, that's not good. May God be blessed, the God of Israel, who does all these wondrous things, and He alone does them over here. I've got a nice little mushroom over here. Two people went forth on business. One of them received a thorn in his foot. He couldn't continue whatsoever. He began to blaspheme God. God, I hit you. I can't believe you did it, whatever. Then he found out that the ship that he was going to go on blew up, right? North Korea got involved, and then all of a sudden the ship was gone, right? So he gave thanks, and he praised out God. What?
They're listening to
it. I don't care. What are they going to do to me? And they thanked and they praised God, right? At least they won't call, what do they call President Obama? Oh, not him. It was the king of, the president of the Philippines. They call him that. Yeah. I don't think they'll call him that. Anyway, but either way, so he said, gave thanks and praise to God. He said, but all of a sudden, like he was so angry, and then all of a sudden it turned. What happened? The answer is that he saw the real stuff. Hosting the flows of Abba. You see the wonders all on its own, and that's that. And it's going to be cool. Well, us at level, we're going to see everything that Kadosh Baruch Hu did for us, and we're going to nod our heads or shake our heads at what we responded to it. We're going to see the awesome stuff. We're going to be like, yes, I responded well. And then we're going to see some of the other awesome stuff. We're going to be like, oh, I did not respond well to that. I didn't do what I was supposed to do in that situation. That's what happened over here. This is a really good one. This is a great Talmud Chacham was living in a time when the generation was excellent. All the people followed the three cardinal virtues of Torah study, davening, and they all gave tzedakah. Nevertheless, the cost of living was very high, and the population was stricken by many sicknesses. The Jewish people, especially hard hit, they suffered the most. This sage could not reconcile himself to the terrible afflictions of this excellent generation. Everybody's doing something good. Why had Bnei Yisrael, what did they have sinned on that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was sending this to them? So he approached a great Talmud of his who was on his deathbed, and he was agreed that after his passing, the Talmud would peer to him in a dream to tell him, why are we doing all these bad things that we deserve to be punished? That's what he told them. I want you to return to me after death. They shook hands on him. The Talmud, unfortunately, died. And then the Talmud Chacham waited the original prescribed 30 days to wait to hear from his Talmud itself. The Talmud didn't show up. So the Tzaddik went to the gravesite, went to the kever, and demanded that the Talmud honor the obligation that he had. Immediately, he fell asleep on the grave, I would assume. And the Talmud appeared to him in a dream and said, it's forbidden for me to reveal things to someone who is not in this world, he said. But I promise you, and then I'm going to come back. All I'm going to tell you is the following. In Perek Mem Chet, in Tehillim, it says, I only think of the kindness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu all day long. You have to understand, even though it might look as meat as a din, there is literally not one thing that's bad the way that we look at it up here in Shemayim. And that's the pshat. I'm not going to understand anything of it. It's just this. Hosin Epilos Levado. That's all it is. I can't understand anything else. Baruch Shem Kavod Olam. I'm going to bless His name forever and ever. Vimalek Vodos Kalaris Amin V'Amein. His name, His honor, will fill up the entire world. Amen V'Amein. And that's what it is. Nevertheless, it's happening for all of this to be true over here. Kalu Tzvilos David Ben Yishai. The Tzvilos of David Ben Yishai have just ended. Now, again, this is not the last Tehillim that he said, because we're only up to 72 and there's 150 Tzvilos, 150 Tehillim altogether. If it ends right here, that's kind of a bummer for the next 70 Tehillim. What's going to happen over there? So rather, from now on, he's not going to mention his own name. There's no other Mizmor LeDavid, LeDavid Mizmor, right? Anything like that. Those are not going to be mentioned. He's going to be basing himself off the other great poets of the time. Moshe Rabbeinu, obviously. Haman, Asaph, Ezrahi, Korach, etc. I'm sorry? We're going to see he was either a great man who was one of the sons of Korach or a poet at that time. One of the two. There's no question on Ruach HaKodesh, that for sure. But either way, it's going to be there. It's not in chronological order. As we've said before, none of Tehillim is in chronological order. There's nothing here that makes sense when it comes to timing-wise and where it's going to be. But nonetheless, these are the ideas of what we're happening over here and what happens regarding Mashiach and what's going to be at the end of days and everything that he mentioned. That could be another reason why, because of what happened over here. Nayin Gimel. You got it?
Yeah.
You got to switch over. It's always annoying when that happens. Mizmor La'asaf. Now we have a Mizmor La'asaf. Ashtov Yisrael Elohim Lavari Leivav. So look what happens over here. Only good is God to the Jews. Only good does he do for us, for those that are pure. were in hearts. And here's the shot. Eeyore argued on everything that God did and said it was paradoxical. HaKadosh Baruch Hu isn't listening to me, God doesn't care about me, etc. You're right. You have to sit there and understand God for it to actually be good. There's no way things can look good to you as long as you sit there and you say, well, I understand what God is doing to me. You'll never understand what God is doing to you. There is nothing that's going to happen over there. All good things in this world, and I'm saying it like this, health, peace, getting wealthy, everything like that, they don't last. The only everlasting thing is the fact that we're going to be Dovuk to Hashem, our connection to our Kadosh Baruch Hu, and that's the idea. Said Dovid HaMelech, you want to be able to understand this correctly, you have to have faith and understand what it's going to be. And that's the Ach over here. The Ach told Lee Yisrael. At the end, you're going to see that good for Yisrael. But it's good. But it's good. Sort of like, yeah, it looks horrible right now. But it's really all good at the end. As for me, my feet almost strayed. I almost walked away. My steps almost slipped. I was so angry at God, he said. So angry at Hashem. I almost said, I'm out. I was going to give up completely. I said, God, I don't want to have anything to do with you anymore. Kaiva was pulling me. I wanted to do what everybody else is doing. I saw a lot of people partying and having a great time, and I said to myself, you know what? I want to be like them. I was jealous of the fools. I saw how everybody who was in Russia was having a great time together. And not only that, Meholil also means to mix together. I saw their mixed dancing. I saw their mixed groups. I saw what they were doing. And I said, why can't I be like them? I want to hang out in bars. Look, I see beer commercials all the time. Beer commercials are awesome. They're living awesome lives. It looks like everything they do is good. So why can't I live like that? Because there is no pang to their death. They don't care about when their death comes. Their bodies are unbelievably healthy. I'm looking at these Rishayim. I don't see anything bad. They look awesome. They act awesome. There are some people that are born with perfect bodies. Absolutely perfect. They're already born with like that six pack and like everything like that. They don't even work out. And they have it perfectly. So he said, he looks at it and he's like, I don't understand. I could have thought, why are you not holding it back? You're giving them everything that they asked for. Compare it to a sick man, right, who was visited by his doctor. He took his hand and said, give the kid every food that he wants. Why give him everything he wants? He's dying anyway. It's not going to make that much of a difference. So up until now, I've kept him on a strict diet. But once he gets over here, just give him whatever he wants. I'm seeing them get everything they want. And I'm not seeing that their death is coming up soon. Says David HaMelech, I'm Amish. I was ready to go off completely. But Amal Enosh, Ein Emo. They don't have any toil of other people. I don't want to give examples, but I'm sure you can think of wealthy men who did absolutely nothing and are just automatically wealthy. Automatically wealthy. A Paris Hilton type. You're born into it. You don't have to do anything for the rest of your life. Literally, you could be a lazy, good-for-nothing nobody, and not work one day in your life, and you'll have all the riches you could possibly want. If you ever read books of like what it was like by Shakespeare, right? All of these little things. There's so many stories of these wealthy people that just inherited wealth, and they didn't do anything for the rest of their lives. All they did was they went to parties, and they were around. That's that. They did nothing else. There were so many people like that. Einemo, the Amal of Enosh, Einemo, they don't have the Adam Lo Nigo. They don't have the plagues that other people have. Even when they walk outside without a coat when it's 0 degrees outside, they don't get sick. Right? They wear tons of clothing. You want to call yourself a Russia? I'll call you a Russia. Come on. But that's that. They're not concerned for others. They could care less. They get easy money. They just go out there and they're just like, I'll buy that. And all of a sudden they make $1 million off it. They fall into it. Yeah, like a lottery ticket. When they're not even, the first time he ever plays the lottery, he just wins $1 million and that's that. No hard work whatsoever. Therefore, their necklace is Gaiva. They feel that they're the greatest people in the world. They wear it like a shirt. Violence for them. They just love it. They love whatever they can get. Yeah?
Therefore, he gets it. Have you tried to see this as somebody who is this one?
What is that? This is the person. He inherited wealth. Or he found wealth. It's so easy.
This makes it seem that this person's off.
No, 100% you won.
So the person that gets it.
I don't think he's coming. No. Hold on. He's not a Russia because he got wealth. He's a Russia because he's not trying hard and he's automatically getting everything he wants. That's why he's a Russia because he's doing evil. Stephanie is also wealthy. You know what I'm saying? Let me put it that way.
It's
not that it's wealth he's giving. bring him all the good. This is it. Pasukat, look what it says. Yamiku v'yadabu v'ra'oishek. They consume. They swallow up others, right? And they speak unbelievable evil. Mimaru mizaberu. From up on high, they speak all this. They boast about everything. And anybody who goes up to them and says, come on, guys, like, calm down a little bit. He's like, why should I calm down? Do you see how awesome I am? Do you realize how much I'm able to get? I don't want to say Donald Trump, our future president of the United States. But yeah, like, look how much I was able to do. And I agree, he is awesome. There's unbelievable things that he's able to do. I can't believe he has gotten that far. But yes, he worked like a dog to get the millions that he has, even though he was led with something. And Yamiku could be learned another way. Ya'amiku. Go deep. Get yourself deeper into it. Contemplate. Think about what you're doing. That's the idea of having Shatu Vashalayim PM. They put their mouths upon the heaven, right? While their tongues walk around the earth. They talk and talk and talk and talk, and they say, we can do whatever we want. They tell others, this is what we can do, this is what they can do. They go around and they tell everybody. They think they know everything. They go around and they tell people, this is what I know, this is what I do. Whenever they speak Lashon Hara, they speak evil things about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what they do. Lachain, Yashuv Amo Alon. Therefore, God returns his people here. Umei Malei Yimatsu Lamo. And abundant waters are drained out from them. The idea is, these people end up finding their way back to the ways of the wicked. They find what these ways are, and the abundant waters, they consider it just water. They get away from the Torah and say, why should I bother? Look, the Torah is not getting me anything. I don't see any reward for that, but look at those guys. Look at what they're getting. What do they say? How does God know? How would God know anything? Right? How is there any knowledge up high what a Kaddish Baruch Hu is giving them? Behold, these are wicked. They have so much tranquility. They have everything in the world. They have reached all the wealth that they could possibly get with ease. There was no problems whatsoever. It's for naught that I purified my heart. The fact that let's say, everybody here at some point has taken themselves down from something. They said to themselves, you know what? I don't think I need to do any of this stuff. I'm no longer going to keep this or keep that, whatever it is. Let's say you were really careful. You said to yourself, I'm not going to eat any Reese's peanut butter cups for the next week and a half.
Can't do it.
Say a guy says it. I'm not going to do it. Okay? So at the end of a week and a half, does he feel better about himself?
Nope.
What does that do? We don't feel anything from it. Maybe at the end of the day, maybe you'll feel something. I purified myself. I made myself better. I had no tithes. I broke my tithes for nothing. I got nothing out of it. And I went and I washed my hands in cleanliness, my hands. And again, I got absolutely nothing out of it. I've been plagued all day long. This is all I've gotten for it. You know what I've gotten for all the good things that I've wanted, for all the things that I've tried to work on? You know what I got for it? I get plagues. I get sick. I get broken fingers. So chakti la bekaren. And people give me musr every single morning. I can imagine. This is it. And I yell at you every single morning. For what? I've been doing everything right. Imamarti asapra kamoi. If I say, I'm going to tell you over like this. What that means is, I will have been faithless to the future generations of the people. If I would say what I really want to say, says Governor Mellon, if I would really tell you, God, would I really think of all the plans and everything you're doing, if I would probe it a little deeper and try to get into it, oh man, you have no idea. I would totally knock out my generations, my future generations for years to come. There's no way they would marry Jewish. There's no way they'd keep any mitzvahs. Because I don't understand. How does this work? And I pondered. I sat there and I thought about these things. It was tiresome in my eyes. I felt like I just don't get it. And God couldn't understand what he was doing. But then I came to the base of Mikdash of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Avina la'achri sum. I understood the plan. I understood what's going to be at the end of days. Now there's a question what Davin Malchum means by this. When did he understand this plan? Is this when he davened to the area of the base of Mikdash? Is that what he means? Right? Is that I went to the area of Arbona Yavusi, I bought the area, and I davened there, and then all of a sudden I got this clarity? Is that what he means? Or is he referring to Olam Haba? Maybe he means I never got it now, but I will understand it in Olam Haba. When I die, then everything's going to be understood. Maybe he's referring to Yemosa Mashiach. The days of Mashiach. Maybe by the time of Mashiach, everything will be understood. Or finally, Maybe it's that I sat down with a bunch of people in a base medrash, we darshan together, and we figured it out. Maybe all of us got together and we said, listen, these bad things, we can understand something from here. Maybe there is something we can take out of this. Maybe that's what it's going to be. I know. Don't worry. We're in the middle. We're in Tosik Yudkes over here. Ach b'chalakos, Toshis Lomo. Surely, you're going to put them down. You know what's going to be with these Rishayim? You're going to allow them to be in a slippery place. They're going to be on a slippery slope. Keep palting the mashuls. You're going to make them fall down into darkness and ruin. That is, it must be that at some point something like that is going to happen. Something bad is going to happen. You know how long it takes for them to be destroyed? A second. In 1 second, these Rishayim, these people that are evil, could be destroyed. Sapu, they will end. Samu machmim balahus. They're going to be consumed with the terror of their own existence, worried about what's going to happen over here. Now listen to this. There's an unbelievable line, a muscle that's given by the Medrash over here. Two men, both were evil, were passing through a woods, and they found an unbelievable treasure of gold, clearly left there by a robber. Right? But they found this treasure of gold, they just happened upon it. There were stones in there, pearls in there, all the good stuff in the world. They said, what should we do? They said, well, listen, one of us has to stay here and watch the treasure. The other one should go back to the city, right? Go get a wagon so we can carry this huge treasure filled with all this gold and pearls and everything like that. So one guy decided to stay. Reuben stayed. Shimon decided to go back to the city. On his way back to the city, he stopped off in his home and he told his wife what he found. You'll never believe it. Me and Reuben, we were able to find this unbelievable treasure in the middle of the woods. You won't believe it. So his wife said to him, you and Reuben? That means you're going to split it? Why should you split it? He said, what should I do? He said, well, first of all, when you get the wagon, don't hire a wagon driver. Don't hire a wagon driver. What do I mean by not hiring a wagon driver? If you hire a wagon driver, the wagon driver is going to see the gold. He's going to want it for himself. So go get a wagon and go get a horse on your own. When you get to that area, here's what you're going to do. I'm going to give you a drink and food for you to celebrate together with your partner, with Reuben. When you get there, I'm going to poison the drink and I'm going to poison the food. You'll get there with the wagon on your own, right? So nobody else will know about this. You'll get there and you'll feed him a little bit of the drink and you'll feed him a little bit of the food, and guess what's going to happen to Reuben? Reuben's going to die. And that way, nobody will know about it. You'll take all the treasure home. So this man, like any good man, listened to his wife, right? And he got the wagon, got the poisoned food, got the poisoned drink, and then traveled to the middle of the forest. Meanwhile, that guy left the forest and went to buy a gun. When this guy came back with his wagon and the food and the drink and everything, the first thing that Reuben did when he saw Shimon is shoot him in the head. Shimon died. And then Reuben, all happy, celebrated on his own with the food and drink that Shimon brought with him. So Reuben died. Neither one of them got to keep the treasure. Neither one got it. That's the concept that's mentioned over here. The evildoers, I see what's happening. I see what's happening to them. In the end, there's a terrible fate waiting for them. In one moment, it's going to be destroyed. As a dream, when one awakes, that's what it's going to be like. It's going to be like a dream. When you wake up, your dream might seem like it takes a million years. Your whole life seems like it's taking a long, long time to get through. But the truth is, once it's already done, you're like, oh man, I feel like just yesterday I went to yeshiva. I feel like just yesterday I was in grade school. That's what it feels like. It's like you woke up from a dream. You despise, and in the city, on that day when they awaken, you despise their images and what they do when they realize that they haven't done anything with their lives. That's the concept. The Bahir, by the way, could refer to Tchiyas HaMeisim, when they wake up from their eventual sleep. My heart was fermented, my reasoning was destroyed. I was sour and bitter. I realized how bad it was. I reached such an extreme state of suffering. I didn't know what to do with myself. I was a fool. I didn't realize. I acted like an animal toward you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, thinking, right, that was the proper way to go. That that's how everything went. But I was always with you deep on the inside. And you held my right hand even during the bad times. Even when I was listening, I was doing the other things when I didn't mean to, but I decided to go the other direction. Nonetheless, you held me, you held my hand and brought me back to the right path. It's an interesting thing over here. There are two good things that Yisurin give a person. Number one, Yisurin do not let you forget God. Because anytime you have Yisurin, you're always thinking to yourself, maybe I should daven. That's a constant thought that you have in your head. Maybe I should daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the first thought that a person has. The second thing is, it makes you despise the pleasures of this world. Because you can't eat or drink anything. So even though if you were fine, if you were healthy, you could eat or drink whatever you want. You get involved in the pleasures of the world, and it's hard to extricate yourself from that. But if you're sick, you can't. So you're sitting there, you don't get anything good. You're able to allow your body to not take in the pleasures and accept that sometimes you don't need those pleasures of the world in order to be happy.
Sometimes it's turning, if something really bad happens, right, then doesn't it might not necessarily make you want to stop.
100%. There are some Yisurin that are so bad where I say, you know what, I can't do it right now. You're right. Yisurin have two good aspects. That's literally what Dovid HaMelech started off with. When he started this film, he said just that. He said, that's where I am. I'm holding right there. I almost failed. You're right. It's a good thing about Yisurin, but that doesn't mean that there's not a perilous end for those people who take it a little bit too far. It is a good thing in a way, but it can lead to a bad thing. Guide me with your Eitzah. Afterward, allow me to have the glory, the kavod that goes to those who listen to your word. Who else is up there in the heavens except for you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Aside from you, there's nothing on earth that I really want more than that. I've tried these things. I don't see anything good behind it. My flesh and my heart, they fail. They're gone. The rock of my heart, referring to God, obviously, and my portion is Elohim Lo'olam, is God forever. And I realize that. I know now that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one that's going to protect me at all times. Because those who are far from you are going to die. Anybody who tries going astray from you in the end are going to be totally destroyed. You're going to cut them off. I realize that getting close to a HaKadosh Baruch Hu has only been good for me. I placed God as my protection so I can tell of all of your work and everything that you've done over to other people, even to the wicked, and try to convince them that this is the way to go.
Is that a bit harsh though? Because if he himself is saying that he was pushed to the brink, but he held on, so meaning somebody who's not as strong as David HaMelech, they're going to be destroyed. That seems a little bit harsh. Meaning somebody goes through a lot of problems. Like, look,
I think there are a lot of people who are like David HaMelech in their own way. David HaMelech's peckle was big for him. The fact that, let's go through a couple things, right? I mean, his son rebelled against him. He was hated by his father-in-law and tried to be killed. He was attempted, there was attempted murder many, many times. He did wage war quite a bit. Yeah, that is 100% correct. We started in the beginning, at the end of Kalifil's of Meisha, the Niyam Loei says that those were tefils, none of them are in order, but those tefils are the end of where David HaMelech is directly involved talking about his direct life. The rest of them is David HaMelech going through the Tehillim of the other poets and explaining them and going through, or whatever you want to call it, like putting them with Ruach HaKodesh.
My question still is, it seems rather harsh that somebody not doing it he's doing it because he just can't take it.
These avos. Well, it's not even a title. It can be out of anger, but I hear what you're saying. Agreed. I just think there are so many people that have not failed in this regard. And David HaMelech, I think, is going to those people and saying, don't fail. Don't worry. I also was like that. I also saw those terrible things. And yet, I overcame it. And I said to myself, you know what? It took me a little bit to figure it out, but I figured it out. And now I realize. I think that's the idea. Not that the other ones are going to fail. That's not the stress of this tale. It's that I realize that I myself can pull myself out of this. That's the idea.
What does he consider failing going off of there? I mean, it doesn't mean failing isn't just giving in, because it's true.
Failing is losing your faith in God. Losing your faith.
So going off there.
Yeah. That's like a result thereof, but not the fact that one time you break Shabbos is not the, see, you failed. That's not that. You can do tshuva for that. That's not a failure. The failure is you no longer want to have that connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And really, the truth is, it goes up until the end, right? Because if you do tshuva up until the end, I guess it really won't matter at the end of the day. It deals with what you think of life and why you're there, so to speak, in that time. We've got another Mizmor Basaf in Ayin Dalet over here. This is one of the more weird ones, I would call it, because Asaf, and maybe this is David HaMelech using a pseudonym in some way, is watching the Beis HaMikdash be destroyed. Obviously, the Beis HaMikdash has not even been built yet.
He just did it in the previous.
Yeah, he did it before where he sees like something. Here he's like watching, and I intend we're going to see it again. He's seeing the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash and praying for the Jews when they're going to be in Golos, that in this idea. Maskil Asav. There is the Ruach HaKodesh of Asav. Look at the word. Maskil stands for the word Seichel. That the Seichel of Asav told him, Lamalim Zanakul Hatta. Why, God, do you seem to cut us off forever? Yeshan Abkob Itzomari Sefa. That your anger smokes against the sheep of your flock. Does a shepherd ever get so angry at his flock that he starts killing them? But what are the sheep supposed to do? They're a bunch of, I don't even say it this way, they're a bunch of idiots. Like, they're fools. Sheep can't think their way through anything. And that's us. Like, what do you want from us? We're like sheep. Just if we do something wrong, we're going in the wrong direction. So just lead us back. What's the big deal over here? There is a nice little Kabbalistic idea that he says, Zanachta Lanetza. What is Netza? He says, well, we all know, there's Chesed, Gevura, Tzeres, Netza, Hod, Yesod, Malchus. That in those seven spheros that are out there, Netza is number four. He says, we're dealing with the fourth, I guess you can call it, the fourth attribute in the sequence of fundamental attributes that correspond to the 6 days, 6 millennia of the world's existence. The seventh is Malchus, that's the kingdom of Hashem, which is Shabbos in a different way. But this idea is, Netzach is when the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed. It was destroyed in the fourth millennium, which I guess is true. It was destroyed by the year 4000, which would have been the fourth millennium. One to the year 999 is the first millennium. 1000 to the year 1999 would be the second. 2000 to the year 2999 third. And 3000 to 3999 is four. And technically the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed in 3828, depending on the parish. So therefore, there was some type of destruction over here that happened, and that's in Netzach, in the fourth millennium of the world. And of course, Malchus will eventually lead to when, you know, hopefully it's before that. Let's just leave it like that. Zchor Adoscha, remember your congregation, Kanisa Kedem, which you acquired of old. Chazal say that Yisrael was acquired by HaKadosh Baruch Hu before the world was even created, before the even 6 days. That's in the Kedem. Also, Sheva Nachla Secha, you have redeemed the Shevet of your Nachla, your inheritance. Har Tzion, Zeshachat Zabo, on Har Tzion where you will dwell. That's the idea of where we are over here, and that's that. Another parable, another mushroom over here. A man named Shimon arranged for his son to marry the daughter of Reuven. Okay? Reuven was really, really poor. So that was a problem. So the wedding was set to take place in 12 months, and Reuven said, honestly, I don't have much for a dowry. Shimon said, listen, I like your daughter, I like your family, Reuven. I'll take care of the dowry. I'll make sure that my son has everything that he needs. Meanwhile, the poor man became very, very wealthy. And he told his future relative, right, and he told Shimon, listen, I can do it now. I'll be able to give a dowry for my daughter. It looks like everything's going to work out. Later on, when the wedding happened, Reuven decided, you know what, I'm out. I'm not in the mood. I don't want to give the dowry anymore. I know, I promised to give the dowry, I'm not in the mood. Shimon said, what? And he took Reuven to court. Reuven promised to be able to give the dowry. So, in that, Reuven said, what was going to be over here? So Shimon said, well, I'm surprised. What kind of claim could he possibly have on me? Right? Said the poor man who now became rich. He said, the contract did not say that I was going to become a man of wealth, and I never promised to give a dowry. Just because I'm rich now, even though I was penniless before, it doesn't mean that I have to give anything for the dowry. I don't have to. I can do what I can.
Yeah, but if he promised, then that doesn't the contract go away then?
So, yes and no. He promised. It was never written down. Right?
It was never written down.
So it's his word that he's working on, but in the end, he went back on his word. So he's over on Misha Para. Right? That he did something wrong. He did something wrong. There's no question.
Words
it's not the best sense. It is. It's just not enough. And in that sense, when he takes him to court, he's not going to win. Shimon's not going to win. He's not going to get the money for it. So the mushroom is like this. Remember, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when you acquired us of old, when you acquired us, we were a poor nation. The poorest of nations. We were a nation that was on the 49th level of Tumah, and you didn't expect much out of us. So just because now we're a richer nation, because we keep your Torah, we do things, you can't expect more out of us. We're still the same poor nation. We became a little bit richer. But you can't expect us to all of a sudden give a dowry. We're the poor nation that became a little bit rich. In fact, this happens all the time. What happens when a guy in the middle of Kentucky, in the middle of nowhere Kentucky, wins the lottery? What ends up happening to that guy? 99 out of 100 times, the guy spends all his money on Lamborghinis for his friends, right? And all of a sudden, it's all gone. All the money is gone within a year or two. That's what happened to us. We became very wealthy all of a sudden. We got all of this Torah, everything that we needed to have, and then we lost it all. Because we're a bunch of fools. You can't blame us for this. Because really, we are still the poor nation that you saw originally when it went over there.
Used it for gospel, just like when we became rich after Egypt, we used it for the
position. How have I? We continue to do so. But unfortunately, we used it for the eagle first. That's the problem. That although we did give to the Mishkan, and we were happy to do so, it was more because that was a kapara for the stupidity that we did right before
that. And they tried to take it from the wives.
That's true also. And they were trying to steal the wives.
Well, it's dessert.
Stuff out
they tried to take it
so that's the idea. The idea is that, what do you expect from us? Pause the gimel. Harima bar mecha. We only have a couple of sukkim here. We'll stop with this. Harima bar mecha. Lift up your steps, Mashuls, to the ruins. Netzach kolheira. Right? The ruins that are living forever. Kolheira oyuba kodesh. When you see the evil of the enemy in the kodesh. You know what Titus is going to do in the base of Mikdash. You know what Nebuchadnezzar is going to do in the base of Mikdash. All the evil that's being perpetrated in that area. Don't let it be. Don't let it be. Watch what's happening and destroy it. Get rid of it. Do not allow it to be. Your enemies have roared in the midst of your moed, in the midst of your Beis HaMikdash. Some osos. They set up their own signs as signs. And they said, here's the ikker. This is what's going to be over here. It's unbelievable. Titus, Nero, when he wanted to fight in Israel, started shooting arrows to see what was going to happen. Every single arrow landed in Yerushalayim. Later on, when Titus won, right, and everything was happening, he was praising himself. Look what I was able to do. Look what I was able to do. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, they were a destroyed nation that you destroyed. They were a nation that already was supposed to die that you killed. That doesn't mean anything. They thought their signs were more exalted. Their osos were the greater ones. No, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said. Their osos were nothing. I was the one who allowed it to happen in order for them to be go through.
He's so celebrating that they destroyed a small country. They were the largest empire in the world, and they just ran through a small country in the Middle East. I mean, why is it such a big deal for them?
Why did the Germans try to kill the Jews over any other nation that was in Germany? Now, I agree that they also did any, you know, whatever it is. I'm calling it anti-Semitism, although that's not really the word. That Har Sinai, which is the sinah of the nations that they have for us, and it doesn't apply to every nation, but it applies to many nations, that sinah that's there, even if it's lying dormant, is there forever. You want to call it Amalek, or whatever you want to call it, this hatred for Jews for no reason whatsoever was amazing. And they knew that God was on their side, or they had a feeling that they had a power like no other. And the same way that people nowadays are afraid of this small little country, Israel, because of their power and what they have. That's what Israel was like back then. Small little country that meant nothing. And
right, but I'm saying, it's not like Israel today. It's like the United States deciding to go into, Costa Rica and just occupy. Like, it wouldn't be like that big of a victory.
And what if they tried to go into Cuba and they couldn't do so?
They tried.
Yeah. So it's not that. They tried to go in Vietnam. Different. A whole nation trying to take over a little place is not a guarantee to victory. It's not a guarantee. And Bar Kokhba was a really powerful person. I mean, if we're dealing with real, individual wars or armies or whatever it is, there was power behind the Jews, and they saw that power. Aside from the fact that I truly believe that they knew that we had God on our side. And they really felt that way, especially a person like Nebuchadnezzar, but even Titus probably saw something in the Jews. And they thought that when they defeated them, right? They defeated God. But they were mamish able to defeat God. That's the medrash that he took the parochas and slashed it and found blood coming from the parochas and said, I killed God. He was able to defeat what he thought of was God. That made him more powerful. I think that's how I would learn it. Might not be the exact. We'll stop with this right over here.